tragic accident changed the course of his life forever. For most, it would have begun a life of discontent and wallowing around in self-misery. For Jonathan Nadeau, it kickstarted a new chapter of inspiration and appreciation. Even though he lost his sight permanently, he gained a passion to put creativity first in all areas of his life. And now, he wants to encourage you to do the same. There are times when you'll be faced with a choice. Be crushed by the weight of the situation, or use the fresh start to rebound bigger, better, and more inspired than ever before. This is Tornado, stories of those who refuse to choose defeat and instead chose to embrace the storm. Here's your host, Jonathan Nadeau.
Greetings and welcome to Embrace Your Storm. My name is Jonathan Nadeau. Thank you for joining us. We've got an awesome episode for you today. We have Alex, and he's submitted a feature film to the Tornado Film Festival called Dalwa. And so, Alex, thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
Hey, it's my pleasure. So maybe before we get into Dalwa, if you could talk to the audience a little bit about, like, obviously the film medium is at least one of your creative outlets. What kind of brought you down that road, wanting to, like, make films and stuff like that?
Yeah, great question. So it wasn't really actually until about senior year of high school that I decided I wanted to make movies myself. But my interest in film goes back to my earliest days. And perhaps somewhat interesting is I grew up on older cinema, so I wasn't really seeing the new movies coming out. When I was younger, I was watching Charlie Chaplin and
Hitchcock. No kidding.
Yeah. And so I was, my father exposed me to a lot of the classic movies very early on. And so I was getting exposure to some of the best movies ever made right away. And I got to see just how, the mechanics of film, and especially with the silent film, was really impactful for me because it really taught me how to tell stories visually as opposed to through lots of dialogue and telling the audience stuff, being able to convey stuff on a visual level. So the silent film had a big impact on my decision to actually start making my own movies.
When you would watch those kids, like, with your dad or whatever, would he be telling you, like, oh, this is a great film? Like, you know, would he kind of, like, tell you stuff about the films or things like that? Or would you just kind of watch them together and just enjoy the time watching those films?
Yeah, he would. He had a book, 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die.
And
he
that's a cool book.
trying to work through all of the movies in there. And so he would go rent out these movies and not incredibly sure what to expect or what they were. And he just invite me along to watch him. So, my favorite director is Ingmar Bergman, who's Swedish director that, made movies from 40s to the 80s, pretty much. And so he had shown me some of his movies early on. And yeah, he just picked some of the classics out based off recommendations from books he had. And
that's cool.
Yeah, invited me to watch him.
So how old were you? Like, did you, growing up as a kid, like, did your parents have a kind of a VHS, like, cam recorder or anything? Like, did you try making some of your own, like, silent films as, like, a kid growing up and stuff like that?
I didn't really. It was mostly just watching the movies that I was passionate about until senior year when my counselor was like, okay, well, we got to put what you're interested in majoring in the yearbook, so choose something. And I was just like, all right, I'll go into film. And so I didn't really make my first short film until freshman year of college.
No kidding.
But yeah, I had, I think, a proper perspective on the stories that I wanted to tell and how to tell them from all of the movies that I had been watching leading up to that point.
What was that first film that you did as a freshman in college? Do you still have it?
I have it, but nobody else should see it ever. Not good. I hadn't even really touched a camera before freshman year of college. Like I didn't shoot anything even on my phone. Like it really was, that was my first exposure to using lighting, cameras, editing software. And so, yeah, I was coming in really green. And so my first work is a little bit rough. But yeah, I became very passionate about making it. And so I would make more short films than the other students, yeah, just because I needed to catch up in that way. And I found that the best learning that I could get was from just going out there and making stuff.
Totally. Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. Like after you made that first one, did that kind of spark your fire? You're kind of like, all right, that was cool. I need to do more of this.
Yeah, definitely. I knew that I wanted to really develop a creative style. That was really important for me, was to find my identity as an actual filmmaker and the styles that I liked. And so a lot of my short films through the first 3 years of college was me just experimenting with different things, different cameras, different editing approaches, different forms of storytelling, to really lock in on what I actually liked, what I wanted to incorporate into my style when I knew I was going to start trying to distribute my stuff, get it into festivals, things like that.
That's really cool. What were some of the shorts that you put together that what were like the storylines or stories behind them?
Yeah. So, I guess my first short, that I was actually okay with showing people. It was about this sort of lonely guy. It was like a meta kind of movie about this lonely guy who's trying to make a movie, but can't find an actress, or his like off-putting personality distances people, and so he can't find actors to be a part of it. And so it was sort of this like meta,
okay,
comedy sort of deal. And so that was my first big one. That's what I had to submit to actually officially be accepted into the second year of the film program.
That's cool. How many short films do you think you've kind of put together, like over the years, like before you got to, because you said Dalwa is your first feature film, right?
Right.
Yeah. So how many short films do you think you did before you tried going to the feature film?
I think I probably did maybe around seven or eight.
That's quite a few.
Yeah. And like I said, a lot of them were mostly just experiments trying to figure out what I liked. So what I was making with the short films wasn't necessarily stuff I intended on submitting to any festivals or anything like that. It was really just to try out what different cameras I like to use, what different lighting setups I like to use, and things like that. And so they really were more experiments as opposed to work that I was actually trying to get out there.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, you learn by doing. So that makes a lot of sense. You're kind of just trying out different stuff for the different short films then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what did your dad think of? I'm assuming you must have showed him some of the short films. What did he think of them?
I think he liked some of them and didn't like others.
What was it, more of like the storyline or more of like whatever you're trying to do mechanically with the film that he didn't appreciate, or?
I think he low budget film really isn't his.
Okay.
In production values and his stuff. And so when you're a college student with not much money or resources, stuff is going to look low budget.
Totally. Yeah.
He also likes stuff that is sort of trying to explore deeper themes. And I think a lot of what I was making in college was I was going through sort of a phase of trying to provoke people and get them to react to the screen, as opposed to actually taking it seriously as an art form and exploring different themes. And so once I switched into that mode where I wanted to explore deeper things, that's when he started viewing my work as actually something he would like to watch over and over again.
That's cool. So is that what brings us to Dalwa? Are you exploring more things like that within this movie?
Yeah, definitely. I think Dalwa is sort of an exploration of sort of an idea of universal identity, the experiences that can sort of bond everybody. Because really, these main characters, they're all facing obstacles and challenges in their lives that they're sort of powerless to control. And no matter what decisions they make, how hard they try to make it work, and all the right decisions they make, it's just out of their control, what happens. And I think that's a very sort of intrinsic element of the human experience that we can all sort of bond with, is we've all had experiences like that where we're kind of a victim of circumstance. Things are out of our control, and you know, it results in disappointment, and we sort of find solace in the experience of others to reckon with that.
So do you want to go into, I mean, you're already kind of starting to go into what the movie's about, but do you want to maybe tell us, like, because you said there's three women mm-hmm. characters, right? Like, you may want to give like some background about them and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So the youngest one is an aspiring actress just out of college, and she's struggling to find work in a tough market that doesn't bring a lot of work. And she's facing pressures from her dad, who is encouraging her to do something a little more safe and reliable, predictable career path. But she's passionate about acting and is trying to pursue that. And then the second one is a single mother, and she's trying to work multiple jobs while taking care of her young son, who isn't doing particularly well in school and is acting out in some cases. And so just trying to balance the work and being able to support herself and her child. And that's sort of her conflict. And then the third is a elderly woman who her two daughters are sort of distant, and she wants to connect with them in the recent death of her husband, and they're just really not interested in having a relationship with her anymore. And so she's trying to connect with them, and they're not going for it. So those are sort of the three conflicts of each of those characters.
And you were kind of saying that there's almost three sort of storylines going on in the film with these three women characters, right?
Yeah, so for 90% of the movie, these characters don't know each other. And what I consistently do throughout it is I have them physically cross paths and scenes.
Oh, that's funny.
And so that's basically how one scene leads to another, as we'll follow the youngest one, and then she'll end up in a place where the second one is, and then we'll follow the second one from there to a place where the third one comes, and vice versa. And so constantly crossing paths with each other, which sort of leads the direction of where we take the next few scenes.
So now I think you said, like, is Dalwa the name of like, was it a planet you said that's kind of passing Earth? Like, I forgive me if that's wrong, but I thought no, something.
That, yeah, 100% correct. So there's this underlying thing going on where you hear from news reports that a moon or a planet is passing by Earth, and it's called Dalwa. And the characters will enter certain locations or scenes where like a TV will be playing where they're sort of hearing this, and then
that's cool.
Yeah, and so it's we don't show the planet a whole lot until the end. You're sort of just meant to keep it in the back of your mind as something that's happening while all of this is going on, but then sort of the climax is the three women end up all in the same spot together to watch the moon pass by Earth. And so that's sort of how they all come together in the end, and they actually do meet each other in that capacity.
That's cool. So now with this film, I'm assuming you did kind of, you know, a lot of people in your situation wear like 13 different hats or whatever. So like, did you write this whole script and like, obviously like direct it and produce it and all that? Like, did you have a lot, like any or a lot of outside help with it, or was all this kind of on you?
A lot of the outside help was in the form of the cast. We had to have fairly large cast for a low budget film of like 40 people in the cast.
No kidding.
Or 50. And so that was the biggest outside help. I was director, writer, producer, cinematographer, editor.
Yeah.
So yes. So I played multiple hats behind the camera. I'd say the departments that I didn't really do was mostly audio. That's where I brought somebody else in. That's
okay. Not
forte, but most of the stuff involving the video, editing, cinematography, that was me.
Was there anything where, because, you know, if you had like, let's say you had like 8 short films under your belt, was there anything that caught you off guard? Because, like, you know, I'm assuming a lot of people, you know, could be like, oh, I've done, you know, 8 short films. What's a feature film? Like, I know I got this. Was there anything where you're just like, man, this is so much more X than I thought it was going to be, you know, that like, this is so much different doing it on a short film, even though it's the same, you know, I'm doing the same thing here. Was there anything that kind of caught you off guard with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think that with a short film, it's easier to assess what resources you need, and you can actually almost write a script tailored to what you know you have and can achieve. So you can write a script that, you know, is in just a couple of locations or is in one location. So you don't have to be going from place to place, setting up different shoots on different places or something like that. With a feature script, it's harder to contain it in that way, because you do need to expand the story in ways that is interesting and moves things in a further direction. And especially when you're talking about a non-linear storyline, sort of, that's following 3 different characters, well, they all have their own locations and things that they're doing. And so it was harder for me to assess just how much I would actually need in terms of resources. You know, I just sort of jumped into it, and it was actually really rewarding to walk into a situation where I found my back was against the wall, where the idea of the scene I had in my head wasn't exactly practical once we actually got on set and were looking at the situation, and we couldn't really do what I had initially envisioned. And it was actually really rewarding. And I think even made some scenes better to put me in that position and force me to change some things to make it work.
That's cool. Like, how many different like locations did you have to go to? Cause I would imagine, just from hearing, you know, even the three women having to kind of cross each other's paths and everything, that alone makes it sound like there was quite a few locations just from that.
Yeah, definitely. I think we probably had to do 20 to 25 different.
Wow. Ones.
Yeah.
Did you do them all in the town where you live?
All in the general area. It came down to, yeah, what locations we could get decent rates on.
And yeah, I was just going to ask. So did you have to get like permits and stuff like that for all those locations?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Used some places like my brother's apartment.
Where oh, there you go. Okay.
You know, we took advantage of stuff like that. So,
okay. That's cool.
Used my connections to get a couple of the locations. A lot of the stuff at the school was just my high school, and they gave me permission to film there.
That's so cool.
There were people that came through for us that
that's really cool
in terms of locations.
Yeah.
But there were others where we had to fork up some money for it. Yeah.
Now, would you, after getting this feature film done, do you prefer feature films over short? Like, would you want to do another feature film? Like, that didn't leave a bad taste in your mouth or anything?
Yeah, no, it definitely didn't leave a bad taste in my mouth, and it was extremely rewarding. I think I became better at every single position I played as a result of
making a
feature. So I became a better director and cinematographer and everything else. I think that features are more marketable, you know, a short
film. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
Go so far, and, you know, every person and his cousin has made a short film. So it's just such a high quantity of stuff that you're competing against, that it's, I think it's harder to market a short film in an actual, or and see any actual returns than it is a feature where, you know, more festivals probably are not getting as many local features and are more accepting to those. And you could possibly find some sort of distribution in the form of, I don't know, DVDs and Blu-rays, where you might see some actual tangible returns on the work.
Yeah, I like that. Again, Earl, I'm kind of going back to what you said earlier, where you said you learn more by kind of doing and stuff. And what Ed Sheeran, this musician, he said this thing one time during an interview. He was like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. He was like, I just write song after song after song. He's like, you have to write 1,000 crappy songs to get to the good stuff. And he's like, so, you know, I would just keep writing songs and songs and songs. And, you know, as you're doing that, as you're writing songs, you're just getting better, you know, and not saying that people are, you know, all the films they're going to put out are crap. But the point is, like, you just need to keep doing it. And like, as you keep refining your skills from the next film to the next film, before you know it, you're like, wow, you know, this film is actually pretty good, or whatever, you know, like, like I wouldn't feel embarrassed to show this one to someone, you know, like, I don't know. I like that, that your approach is just kind of taking action.
Yeah. I think that's how it has to be. I actually just shot, in another experimental feature, way more experimental than Dalwa. But it was sort of like my work. I work full time as a producer at a TV station here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And they basically came to me and were like, you need to take some paid time off or you're going to resign it. But I don't know what to do with time off. So I decided to just make another movie. And so I gathered a couple people together and we made sort of an experimental feature that's a silent movie mixed with mumblecore, if you're familiar with that phrase.
No, I'm not actually.
Yeah, so mumblecore was sort of this movement of independent film that came about in the early 2000s that was just like very much...
what it sounds like there's no like actual dialogue, but they're just kind of like kind of doing stuff like that.
Well, actually a big part of mumblecore is lots of dialogue.
Okay.
It was a result of people who didn't have a lot of money, who did not have a lot of connections, but just had a passion for telling stories and had a camera and went out and did it. And so it's like this very DIY sort of approach to film where it's a lot of improvised dialogue.
That's interesting.
Not a lot of story. I would encourage people to look up that movement, because there's actually quite some good movies in that.
That's pretty cool.
But so it was sort of a combination of mumblecore with silent film and just trying different things, and it came out interesting, if nothing else. You know, I don't know if it's everybody's cup of tea, but it certainly is certainly a rewarding experiment to do.
That's really cool. That's pretty cool. So, Alex, we're kind of rounding third base here. And is there anything you want to, you know, tell the audience? Anything else like about Dalwa you wanted to go over that maybe I didn't get a chance to cover?
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do it without an incredible cast and crew. We had shot through COVID, which was a huge obstacle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was that there were, and I don't need to rehash everything going on from 2018 to 2022, but
yeah,
we would make a movie in between all of it. And the cast was just, and crew was just committed to getting the idea done. And so it definitely wasn't a one person effort. And Yeah, so that's what I would say about that movie, is it really boils down to just an incredible team that committed to it. But I would also say, just generally to other people that are thinking about making a feature, is I don't think you actually need a lot of money or resources to explore deeper themes. And to me, cinema really is an art form on par with the other art forms out there, like literature and classical music and painting. And like, it has the potential to explore elements of the human condition in as complex a way as those art forms. And
I agree,
need a lot of money to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, no, I agree with that. I honestly was kind of saying this on another interview, where people are more, I want to say, more forgiving about like the quality, because, you know, quality is kind of in the eye of the beholder, but it's more of like ease of access to films. Like, if you can make your film easily or readily available, people are going to watch it. I think that's the main hurdle for people to get over, you know. Like, what we were talking about on the other interview is this person uploaded their film to YouTube, and it just took off. They got over, 2 million views. Like, it started going viral. And I was like, see, that's kind of my point. Like, cause we're sort of talking about distribution at that point. And I was like, honestly, the distribution company is the internet. Like, you don't need to get in the hands of some guy who says, oh, I got contacts at NBC or Netflix or whatever. Like, you just need to find a place on the internet where it's easily, you know, can be seen. And you know, as long as you got like a good story or whatever, people are more and more forgiving of like kind of quality, in the sense of like, you don't need to have a $500 million budget in order for someone to want to watch your film, you know?
Right.
And so I think if, like I said, ease of access is kind of the key to success, in my opinion, and obviously a good story. But in my opinion, I just don't think people, or a lot of people, don't hang on to, you know, oh, well, again, it's not a $500 million budget, I don't want to see it. I think there's a lot less people that are like that now, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right on, especially now where you're not seeing a lot of originality in $500 million movies. You're kind of
exactly
thing. It's like, there are actually new ideas at a more low budget indie level that people should seek out, because otherwise you'll miss out on a lot of the original and very smart and good movies that that need that support. A $500 million movie doesn't need your support as much as a $5,000 movie does. So yeah,
right.
You're fine. Yeah.
Well, Alex, I appreciate your time, and thank you so much for your submission to the festival. Without, you know, people doing work like you, there'd be no reason for the Tornado Film Festival. So I appreciate your work and your effort into everything that you do.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. And of course, your festival is obviously doing good things, giving the right people a platform.
Absolutely. That's what we're here for. So everyone, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And we will catch you next episode. And don't forget to embrace your storm. See ya.
Tornado with Jonathan Nadeau. If you haven't yet, please subscribe now so you're first to hear new episodes with more stories of inspiration about the highs and lows of life and how embracing the storm is so much more fulfilling of a life than being crushed by the weight of the world. And until then, we hope you're inspired to do something, whether it's creating, participating, or learning, whatever leads you to your personal passion.